This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome to the Ankler Podcast. This is Sean McNulty from the Wake Up Newsletter here at the Ankler, here from a very balmy Jersey Shore on Thursday, March 14th. I'm joined by Elaine Lowe and Richard Brushfield in Los Angeles. Elaine, you doing okay there, kiddo, after the big cancellation this week?
R.I.P. Breakpoint. We hardly knew ye.
Sorry, but Netflix. You're killing
yes.
Elaine.
I know. So no more tennis show for me. But Netflix did announce, to fill the gaping hole in my heart, a Carlos Alcaraz docuseries today, which explains why, over the course of his time at Indian Wells, he's been writing on the cameras like, N and ta-dum. And it's like, okay, we get it. There's some kind of Netflix announcement coming.
All right. So it's 2025, Elaine. So this year you're going to have to, you know, make do, I guess. But
I'll somehow manage. Thank
you'll
you.
Somehow manage.
For your-
All right.
For your condolences, Sean.
I will. Just want to acknowledge it, put it in the annals of history here. Of course, before we get going, a reminder, you can catch the Ankler crew over on LA's number one NPR station and Southern California's public radio flagship radio station. That, of course, is 89.3 LAist throughout the day, every Thursday, as part of their Entertainment Thursday programming during Morning Edition, Air Talk, and All Things Considered. And as always, you can reach us, the three of us, Richard, Elaine, and myself, here at the podcast anytime at podcasts, plural, podcasts at theankler.com. Plus, Richard, we have to give a big Oscar congratulations going out to Ankler subscriber Jordan Augustine.
Yay, Jordan.
Yay, Jordan, who works over at Peacock for his big Oscar prediction skills, getting 21 points out of 23 in the Ankler Oscar pool, Richard. Is he getting a plaque in the office? What happens here?
That's huge.
Quite an achievement.
He will be our most honored reader, among readers here for.
Very nice. Very nice. So a high bar for next year, for sure. That is impressive. Richard, did you win any Oscar competitions this year or not so much?
I won the competition of who could eat the most junior mints at the show.
Okay. Wow. I did not know that was a competition.
That was in Jimmy Kimmel's snack packs that he put out. He had a soft pretzel and a box of junior mints, a full-size box. And to keep me alive and standing up through all 9 hours of the show, I think I ate like 15 of those boxes, and I may have been hallucinating by the end of the show.
That sounds about right. I think you were in some sort of a coma. I don't know which one, but yeah.
So if anyone thinks that they ate more junior mints than me at the Oscars,
yeah,
they should let me know.
Richard's going to fight you on this.
Yeah, I don't think the Oscar crowd is really going to own up to eating 15 boxes of Junior Mints. So I think we'll give it to you, Richard.
They also had bowls of Hershey's Kisses.
We don't need to know that count. That's all right. I think
just sort of chase the Junior Mints with Hershey's Kisses.
All right. So. Well, we'll get all of Richard's first person non-food Oscar gossip a little later on in the podcast. And we're going to dive into Elaine's latest report on Where the Jobs Are, part two. Elaine, part two. So looking forward
Very
to finding out
stuff.
All the intel there. Plus a look at the streaming scorecard for the future of the streaming business, our savior, advertising. I will break down some numbers to note after earnings season, looked into the earnings reports and found some very curious things, at least curious to me. So we're going to dive into those. Richard, Elaine and I are very disappointed you do not wear your tux today. What, Elaine and I aren't good enough?
Did you send it back to the rental store already, Richard?
Did you return it?
Ross Dress for Less has more important clients than me. So I see.
Well, hopefully they got some extra junior mints in the mix there. Or they can get some junior mints out of it, whatever it takes out of the stains. But yeah, I don't know. All right. Well, of course, the big news this week, DC is coming for TikTok, Richard. We'll see what the Senate has to say at some point. They have really not said much of anything about their thoughts on this bill that passed the House. Are you concerned about your influencer status on TikTok, Richard? Where you're our big TikTok influencer. What's your take here?
You know, I enjoy TikTok quite a lot. I get a lot of recipes off of there.
Do you really, Richard?
Yeah, I do. That's my go-to cooking source these days. If I'm going to make a carbonara, I search for carbonara.
I don't even have TikTok downloaded. Wow, I'm like super impressed, Richard.
And I like to watch weird weather events and little comedy skits. So, yeah, I'd be willing to sacrifice our country's freedom for these cooking videos and everything. That seems like a completely fair trade-off to me, and I'm down for it.
I hear the New York Times is a great cooking product, so we can subscribe to that, Richard, and get you signed up. So I think we'll figure it out between the two of us to save America. So elsewhere, Elaine, in the news, UTA has dueling lawsuits going on. Always fun. You know, if you're going to do it, just dive all the way in. They're suing the head of their MediaLink marketing and consultancy business, Michael Kasson, for essentially misappropriation of funds. And Kasson is saying he resigned, he was not fired, and is suing to go into arbitration. And he just wants $25 million, Elaine. I mean, that's not a big ask, right?
Every week a new drama in this town, honestly.
You had enough of it, Elaine? You're sick of the drama?
Nothing.
Too much.
The amazing thing about these stories is the write-ups of this, their attempts to describe what it is that he actually does and what his company does and what they're paying him for. So when they're saying that he used funds inappropriately, when they can't really describe what the appropriate uses of funds for that company are, it's some of the most confusing stories I've ever read.
Yeah, it's been very creative and a lot of varying descriptions, Richard, across the accounts, that's for sure. So yeah, when you can't even say what the company does exactly in a succinct way, I think that's not a great sign for finding that out. But over at Paramount, Elaine, they're still back in the news. Your favorite company, I know, your favorite topic to talk about. So never a dull moment for Paramount News, it seems like, in the news cycle, Elaine.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody loves reading about Paramount.
That's what they always tell me. First, they sold off another part for cash, Elaine. Of course, they've got written Simon & Schuster previously and the CBS headquarters in New York.
And now Viacom 18, which you've written about before.
Viacom 18, our favorite Indian media conglomerate. And it's nice to see the Viacom name live on somewhere, Elaine, isn't it? You know, it's like, at least in the world, Viacom still exists as a real media business.
Global nostalgia programming here.
Exactly. Paramount sold their 13% stake they still had in the business for $517 million in cold hard cash, Elaine. So that'll go nice toward things like debt repayment or keeping the lights on, you know, whatever it might be there at Paramount.
A little debt repayment as a treat.
As it is, just if you have some leftover. If you have some leftover. And I'm sure Taylor Sheridan gets a cut of that somehow, but I'm not quite sure. And then Axios reported that investment firm Apollo Global sent Paramount a you up text, basically saying, you know, hey, want to talk acquisition again? Since last month we soured on the idea, and now all of a sudden we're interested again, Elaine. So, you know, just things just move right along in the business here, Elaine.
Oh, absolutely. Every week a new suitor for Paramount, it feels like.
They're a new old one. Like, they were in it before, then they weren't out, and, you know, do they want the whole company? Do they want the, you know, part of the company? Do they just want the cable networks?
Will they
know?
Or won't they? A classic tale, Sean.
But every round on this seems to get progressively more grim and ominous. This doesn't seem to be going in a direction that you're attracting a higher quality of suitors here.
Yeah, when you have the rebound guy coming back at this point, that's certainly... Well, it is what it is. And Richard, as you always say, these are the things we hear. Doesn't mean there's aren't other things going on that we don't know about.
But the value, once you announce, hey, we got a fire sale on, and you just let that sit there for months, not doing any great things for your value with that. So I don't have a good feeling about all this.
All right. Okay. There you go. That's the takeaway on that one. Elaine, you know, people may not be looking to Paramount as a source of long-term secure employment, I guess, as a result of this. But let's pivot over to your column, Series Business, this week to look around town to see where the jobs are actually at in Hollywood. And what did you find?
Well, I found that if you are a production or studio executive hoping to find a job at one of the major players in town, well, here's hoping that you learned to code or took a stats class in college.
Yeah.
I did a little breakdown of Disney and Warner Brothers in particular, took a look at all their job listings in the LA area just to get a sense of what kind of jobs are available. You know, I mean, we've talked so much over the last few months of just what a weird time it's been coming out of the strikes, coming out of all this consolidation. And so I was like, okay, if you're looking for a job at a major studio, like, what's actually out there? So looking at Disney, I narrowed it down to Burbank, Glendale, Santa Monica, where Hulu is based, and LA proper to get a sense of, like, here's what jobs look like in the LA area. And out of 269 jobs at Disney in LA, 118 of those are technology jobs.
Wow.
And a distant second were finance and accounting jobs. There are about 29 of those. And then 13 creative jobs. And the list just kind of goes down from there.
Yeah.
And the most jobs available are, no surprise, in Disney's direct consumer division. About 72 of those 269 jobs are in the streaming division.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's just really reflective of what a tech town Hollywood has become. When you have 44% of open Disney positions, mainly looking for software engineers, data analysts, product managers, things to support the streaming business, essentially. And it's like, oh, if you're wondering where the job growth is, it's in tech.
Yeah, no, I think we all kind of have a gist on that, but the numbers there were pretty striking that you found. And I was like, wow, I wouldn't have pegged it to be that high, but that's pretty not crazy, I guess. It makes sense, and we'll get into the advertising business in a little bit, which does kind of like justify,
tie
into that. But it was striking to see you lay it out there in even more detail in the piece.
It's one of those things that seems super obvious, and then you take a look at the numbers, and we have it charted out in the newsletter, and it's like, whoa, that's a lot of jobs. That's a lot of tech jobs, which, again, surprises about nobody, but to see it laid out like that, you know, there was one creative executive job open, posted on Monday, for a senior vice president in comedy development at 20th Television.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. The studio behind Modern Family and Only Murders in the Building. So a plum job.
Tell me more.
Richard, it has a salary range of $297,000 to $409,500.
What are the hours?
If it starts before 11, are you out?
Yeah, what's your cutoff, Richard?
So, yeah.
All right. Okay. Richard, you couldn't afford that pay cut. Who are you kidding? Come on. Yeah. Let's But, you know, it is in contrast to, you know, maybe the plethora of tech jobs, but the dearth of maybe creative jobs. But there are a few executives in the, you know, job positions open at around town, just maybe not in the traditional studios, Elaine.
Yeah, not at the traditional studios. Interestingly, I was looking up Amazon Studios, and they actually have four positions open, which, you know, it's not like a huge number, but,
but
four times the number at Disney right now.
Listen, comparatively speaking, yeah. And I guess that sentiment, Elaine, that, you know, again, here we are, middle of March, but like, hey, maybe this will pick up as the year goes along, or, you know, what's your thinking on that, or what are you thinking in terms of that positioning?
Well, within the studio exec world and studio staffer world, it doesn't seem to matter whether you're a junior, mid, or upper level creative at a studio. There's just a scarcity of jobs out there. And I've heard that time and again from the studio people that I've talked to who have gotten laid off over the last couple of years, who are trying to find something new and don't have anything that they can jump to. It's a tough market. And when we looked at Warner Brothers Discovery, which had about 111 jobs open as of Monday, 36 of those positions were actually internships. So there were 71 full-time positions open. And again, the largest bucket by far were tech gigs, you know, which makes sense, but is just in stark contrast to the amount of other kinds of positions open. So it's like, if you're looking for a job at a studio or a network right now, it's looking pretty grim. But if you're looking for an internship, WBD is hiring.
And some at Disney as well. Yeah, you mentioned
that. Young people, get your you know, submissions in for the summer and fall. There's hope for you yet.
Like the entry level position, like, you know, if you want to come into Hollywood, there's availability, Elaine. It's like, it seemed like there was those kinds of levels of position as well.
And a little bit,
maybe a few more than that. But yeah, it's a stark. Well, you laid it out very well, and it was definitely, you know, again, some things you have in your head that, yeah, this is probably the case, but to see it laid out that way and was like, oh, it was a great read, Elaine.
Oh, thanks. Well, I'll be doing it again for Monday if anybody wants to see this laid out again for places like Netflix and NBC Universal.
And maybe, Elaine, maybe like production companies, other areas maybe picking up some of this slack too, where that may be part of the equation here, in increasing numbers perhaps.
Yeah, and that's interesting and something that I'll be looking into in the coming weeks. So if any of our listeners work at, you know, boutique production companies or businesses that support the business, you know, I heard from somebody who works in props today. I get reader mail from people who are giving me a sense of what they're seeing from their individually owned businesses that support production. I would love to hear from you. I'm at Elaine@theankler.com.
All right. And be sure to check out that piece again over at the website, theankler.com, and keep an eye out for Elaine's next installation. Up next, going from where the jobs are to where the ads are in streaming, and more importantly, the ad revenue, which has quite a disparity between the major players as I dove into this week in The Wake Up. So we'll dive into that here. And Richard's first person of count of Oscar night inside the theater and all the gossip, of course. Elaine and I have a lot of questions for you, Richard, so we'll get your take on that as well as your bigger picture thoughts on the institution as well. We will be back in a moment.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
All right, so as Elaine just shared with us, the most prevalent job posting in Hollywood isn't the creative departments, but the tech departments. And Elaine, there's a reason for that. The ad biz is all about, advertisers are all about the data, and as the focus shifts to streaming and the growth of the ad tiers, these tech jobs and then the data analyst jobs to get the information for advertisers, who's watching, where are they watching, how much are they watching, this becomes a much bigger job than, you know, reading a Nielsen report, which was kind of what this, you know, the equivalent used to be. Disney reported last year in Q2 and Q3, half of their signups for Disney Plus were ad tier customers. That's probably even an increase from there. Netflix's, you know, reported their ad tier take up is becoming a larger part of their signups as well. So this is, you know, again, where the business is shifting. Always a lot of the media around the FAST networks, Elaine, you know, from Tubi to Pluto to Roku Channel. There was just another piece this week on Tubi's engagement growth numbers of millions of minutes or hours streamed, whatever it was. Not accompanied by a revenue number, but still Fox is always very positive about it. You know, Amazon, of course, launched their, essentially went ad tier with Amazon Prime just about 6 weeks ago, Elaine, and Netflix has been heavily investing in their ad tier. You know, the question kind of becomes, you know, who do you trust to deliver this the ad experience better, the tech streamers or the studio streamers? And I think that's in those job reports, it seemed like that was like, yeah, we need more people here, and how do we attract talent to this? Because this is, they understand this is, I don't know, that jobs report really cemented what I was seeing in the advertising business as well.
Yeah, incidentally, they're one of the more recent job listings I found over at Amazon on their Prime Video segment is for an advertising insights manager, just 6 months after they've introduced ads for their subscribers. So it makes sense that they would be expanding their own team to really parse ads and figure out, I guess, the engagement or what people are clicking on and what the follow-through is, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And no, and that's, you know, look, the Amazon added their Black Friday football game this year was a big story back day after Thanksgiving. And, you know, and what are they doing? They customize streaming ads, you know, literally QR codes and everything in the game. And it was, you know, you just see the future that's coming along, and I don't know. It seems a little bit like the studio's maybe playing a little catch-up here in terms of that part of it. And again, who has that expertise, Elaine? And that's, you know, advertisers, it's, you know, relationships are one thing, Elaine, but, you know, being able to deliver data to them and make your pitch is a compelling argument in terms of where they're going to spend their dollars.
And speaking of data, your Wake Up newsletter on, I believe it was Tuesday, right, which broke down all of the advertising revenue dollars was interesting because looking at a very stark contrast between linear and streaming dollars in 2023.
Yeah. So I broke down the earnings reports. Everybody had their end of year, you know, reports recently, the past 6 weeks or so. You know, linear TV, which, you know, I kind of assume everybody is pretty equal, but they were pretty equal in terms of their revenue last year. They're all roughly, and these are the major players, you know, WBD, Paramount, Disney, and NBCU, about $1 billion, you know, give or take. And all of them were down roughly, you know, minus 10% was NBCU, and the highest was, I think, minus 13% at WBD. So, you know, pretty uniform, you know, business. And for obviously, they've been around for decades, Elaine. So, you know, that kind of makes sense that it's maybe shaken out to a pretty even kind of four-way pie there. But then I did all the math on the streaming advertising, and it's night and day. Like, they're just the advantages here. I mean, Disney, of course, you know, has Hulu now, and Hulu is the, you know, the OG in this business, so certainly some inherited advantage there. But they were
far and away the number one,
far and away,
bringing in $3.3 billion.
Yeah, and then the next was Paramount at 1.8. So essentially, it's a 2x over the next person in, you know, in there. And that, look, they own two streaming services, Disney Plus and Hulu. That's nice, you know, and they also, the Hulu Plus live TV business is part of that as well. So some advantages there where Paramount is just, you know, Paramount Plus and Pluto and a little bit of BET Plus. And then down from there was NBCU. They had a huge year. They're still losing a ton of money on Peacock, but their advertising revenue was up 40% to $1.4 billion. So pretty close to Paramount. And then you got Warner Brothers at $548 million, which is, you know, that's
what's that all about? Break that down for us.
Well, I mean, look at it. That's Discovery Plus and Max. So that's where, you mm-hmm. know, we're talking about here. But Max essentially was HBO, and HBO was ad free. Like, you know, so the uptake on the ad tier for Max is apparently not that large. And Discovery Plus as a business, I mean, we don't really know what the size is anymore, but a lot of the Discovery programming has been folded into Max. So it just seems like they're behind the ball because of HBO, because it was never an advertising business. And that's the prime, still the prime draw of Max, arguably speaking.
Which makes sense ad-wise. Although we also saw WBD's streaming segment cross over into profitability this past year, no?
Right. And of course, you know, they're the $100 million profit, I think, in the last quarter. What HBO does, or what WBD does versus, say, Paramount, is they include the HBO linear business in the streaming number. So the monster that was Bloomberg said, wait, $1.6 billion in profit in 2016, the HBO linear business is folded into that, where Paramount, the Showtime business, is in the linear networks business. It's not in the streaming business, and Paramount is still losing, you know, it's lost $100 million in Q4, and that's going down. So it's the accounting, Elaine, kind of, you have to read between these numbers. They don't, it's very much as the linear business is pretty much uniform across all the companies to evaluate, the streaming business is way, way different when you dive into it. So breaking all that down was a lot of calculator math and finding the numbers in different areas, Elaine, you know, across the different sectors. But it was really interesting because, again, people speak of this as, oh, they're all in the same business, they all have ad tiers, they're all competing. And it's like, well, some people have a pretty big head start on this, Elaine. And as we said, you know, it's about relationships, it's about inventory, things like that. And there are some big advantages that some companies have that others have a long way to go on.
Right. You look at Disney, and their year-over-year numbers were actually down slightly in the single-digit percentage, but still, you know, head and shoulders above the rest at $3.3 billion. And you look at WBD and NBCU, which are both up in the double digits, 35-40% respectively. And they're still far and away, nowhere near where Disney is in terms of bringing in streaming advertising revenue.
Yeah, percentages are really deceiving. And this gets in my wheelhouse, Elaine, being a media nerd here. But, you know, yeah, Disney was down 5% total. And Warner Brothers, you know, was up, or WBD was up 35%. But if you look at the math, it just doesn't shake out. Or you look at Paramount plus 17%, Warner Brothers plus 35%. Who had a better year? We'd say WBD, right? But WBD's money was only $141 million, and Paramount added twice as much at $262 million. So, you know, when you're talking dollars and cents here, Elaine, it gets to be, you know, and again, it's about revenue. It's getting out of that hole, right? Getting that minus into a plus. And how do you do that? Just got to add more money. So
now tell us, Sean, what about Netflix?
Oh, well, Elaine, yes, I have all the data on Netflix.
I'm sure you do. I mean, you're so transparent about everything.
I don't know why I wouldn't lead with that, Elaine. It's very odd. It's a very strange choice of mine. So yes, exactly. We have Netflix with zero data. When they tell us one day, at least we have the comps to at least put it against on the studio side. Amazon, of course, would break out either, and Apple doesn't have any advertising. So no data there, Elaine.
What a surprise that we don't get anything from the tech guys.
It's funny. I mean, Netflix is, you know, the most transparent in some regards. In other regards, they are a brick wall. So this is a brick wall at this point.
I feel like they're just waiting to be able to trot out a really impressive number with ad revenue So they can come out of the gate saying, look at how great we did. But they have to get to that threshold first, which so their silence on that is somewhat indicative.
That was exactly my we were of like mind on that, Elaine. As I was putting this together, I'm like, I bet you when this comes out, it'd be pretty close to this number to say, hey, we've caught up with these guys in 2 years or whatever it's going to be. So more to come. You can, of course, read the whole breakdown there over at theankler.com. And Richard, you know, we don't need to do a full Oscars dive at this point, but as the man in the room and the ace photographer, everyone, if you have not checked out Richard's piece the day after the Oscars, I highly recommend you go do that. A lot of great photos of a lot of the names that we talk about here week in and week out, the executives. Richard, what is your key to your paparazzo style? It was very impressive.
Well, there they were. I guess I've been hanging around here enough that I no longer have any shame about asking
that's the key.
Executives to let me take their picture. And the sad truth when you're at the Oscar show is, you know, even if you are a captain of industry, even if you are a Bob Iger or a Tom Rothman, when you're walking down that red carpet, people are just like, get out of the way. you're blocking the view of
hey, buddy. Right. Yeah.
So these poor executives who own the place, after all, have to go through the indignity of being a second class citizens on their own red carpet. And and then I come up with my little phone wanting to take a picture of them, and it's like a breath of fresh air. But whatever Hollywood is going through, it's always a festive air there at the Oscars. Few get so jaded that they're not just like a little bit excited to be there.
Yeah.
You've got kind of that manic energy in the foyer there. So people ask, what was the mood? And it's rarely despondent like it might be before or after. However, a lot of people did have to walk that gauntlet through protesters yelling and spitting in their face to get there. For me, I didn't come in that way, as it wasn't any issue, but for the people who had to deal with that was a little, they seemed a little freaked out.
Pro-Palestinian protests, right, Richard? That's what the organization, I think.
Yeah,
which delayed the show, I think, about 5 or 6 minutes there. But you did have today some lingering puzzles from the show, Richard. Number one, I think, is, you know, why can't you get the In Memoriam right? It's apparently the hardest gig in Hollywood is the In Memoriam for any one of these award shows.
Incredible. Every year. They find a new way to mess it up. And I was speaking in the lobby there to someone who works with the show and has the clipboard of what's happening and when people get to the stage.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, the In Memoriam dancers need to start heading towards the stage now. I thought she was joking, the In Memoriam dancers. But no, then all these young people in these kind of blue Grecian tunics.
Yeah.
And they all appeared, and there they were, the In Memoriam dancers.
I put it in the wake up, Richard, and I can't, you know, the song choice was the same song that Will Ferrell sings at the end of Step Brothers, and I really just couldn't help myself thinking of Will Ferrell and John Reilly. I just couldn't help myself. Sorry. I know it wasn't.
Hey, how many other viewers was this the image that it conjured?
I can't be the only one who had that thought, I guarantee you.
No. It was, I mean, I associate it with, the dancing waters there outside the Bellagio in Las Vegas.
Right. It's
the big, but it's not a subtle number.
No. Definitely wasn't the take there.
And it's the easiest thing. People just want to see
acknowledgement,
the pictures of the people who died and remembered. Yep. Oh, that's right. We lost him.
We lost him. Exactly.
That's all they just don't.
Yeah.
Don't get fancy. Don't overthink it. I know you're the Oscars, but you can just show a slideshow.
Everybody be very happy if that was the case. Yeah. Yeah. So what else? What are the puzzles are on your mind here, Richard? What's front of mind here?
Tell us about Al Pacino Gate.
Yeah. Why can't they get the end presenter right or the situation here, Richard?
Yeah. So I was out in the lobby and I actually made a video of the moment, and you can see that when he announces the Best Picture Oscar in the lobby, there is no reaction. Like no.
Yeah.
No. I mean. No one seems to know what happened. People,
it's like, did he announce
something?
When
there's no lead up.
And he didn't even say, my eyes see Oppenheimer. He didn't even say, and the Oscar goes to, it was just like, my eyes see Oppenheimer. We're like, what does that mean? As a nominee or as a winner?
he claimed later that they told him to do it that way.
Or at least not mention the nominees, they said. Yeah.
Yeah, and they said, yes, we said to leave it out. I think they didn't say, we told you to be rambling and weird enough.
Ad lib on the
but still, it's like there was no biggest moment in the show.
Sure.
And it's not unthinkable that this moment can go wrong, considering it's gone wrong about half the times in recent years. And so didn't stop to have a little chat with Al about, you know, just let's just run through this once, or just
like exactly what words will you be using?
Yeah, what are you thinking here, Al? What's
the Oscar goes to is a little too classic for you.
Yeah, it'd be good.
They just said, go out there, don't mention the nominees, and read the envelope. I mean, it there was no... another part that seems to be a cursed piece of the show.
At least you got the right movie, I guess. We'll take that.
That's a win.
That's a win. That's what we're taking away. That's a win for us now. Yeah, sadly. What else you got there, Richard?
So there was a little kerfuffle online about the account for Origin, the Ava DuVernay movie.
Oh yeah.
Tweeted something about the Neon not inviting their filmmaker to their Oscar party, and the tweet was that everybody sort of jumped at it and said, what? And the tweet was taken down, and then the entire account was taken down shortly thereafter. So there seems to be some tension there. She was sort of publicly disappointed about the lack of nominations for Origin, and filmmakers have a tendency when they're disappointed about results to let their distributor know how they feel they might have been responsible and done better by them. So there could be some tension brewing in that.
Fair enough. You know, and I get to the ratings here, I guess, to finish out, or you definitely have a few more things to check out on the column at theankler.com, but the ratings came in, you know, or the audience, 19.5 million. You know, really, you and I had a very similar take on this, but the coverage out there was extremely positive about this, and I'm like, you know, it was plus 4% from last year, which is 18.8 million. It's up. It was, quote unquote, the highest audience since the pandemic, which was true, but I don't know, Richard.
Well, it was kind of like people were celebrating the show, and they felt very good about the show, and they felt very good about the winners, and they felt, which all you know, fair enough and justified.
Sure. Yeah,
they felt so. It was kind of pre-written, and now the ratings are up.
Right, because the show went well. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, yeah. That piece of it was like the final leg of the great success that was going to come in, and then it comes in, and the ratings are up 4%.
Look, we'll take the wins where we can get them, Richard.
Again, back. That's the theme, Elaine, I think, yeah.
But I don't think Oscar's going to have, you know, the winner was a hugely popular billion-dollar
movie,
making historical drama from probably Hollywood's most celebrated filmmaker right now.
Yep.
Paired with this other film that was a number one movie of the year and also nominated. And start, like, they're never going to have this much handed to them.
No.
On a silver platter like this. And for all that, you're up 4%.
Right.
And I just say the number one, I mean, you can blame on a lot of things. The fact that the awards show is a 100-year-old format that you're trying to peddle in 2024. But also, it's March. 2024 ended 3 months ago. 2023 was a long time ago already.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've noticed anything about the human attention span in recent years, but it isn't getting longer.
No.
It's and I put it on the piece, like, all the websites start doing their best of the year lists in October.
Yeah.
3-4 months before the year is actually over. Like at Halloween they start publishing best of the year lists. And here we are.
8 weeks
left. It's been 8 months since Oppenheimer came out and Barbie came out. It's a long time. And they seem to be keeping it in this position to preserve the whole awards circuit and the whole 7 month slog towards the final ceremony, which is, I think, a hugely misguided. You're preserving the parasite that is killing you and is draining any drama and interest from this whole thing. And they should be looking to cut that off themselves rather than doing it any favors. And I don't know. I propose, if it was me, I would say, okay, from now on, Oscar ceremony is October 2nd. January 2nd. January 2nd. We'll just do it. And if everyone else has to scramble and figure out how they're going to work around it, then not our problem.
But a lot of good thoughts there, Richard. Go check out all of them, all 7 lingering Oscar night puzzles over there at theangler.com. We'll finish out here in the present day movie business. We'll keep along with Richard's theme, stay in the present here at the 2024 box office, which thanks to Dune and Kung Fu Panda is now just down 10% versus 2023. Unfortunately, that's versus 2023 and not 2019, where the comps are much worse. But making a dent in the year so far, still some ways to go here, but a little bit of good news there. And just a special shout out here to Entertainment Strategy Guy, who has a great new piece up today, actually, looking at the missing box office billions that still exist between today and the pre-COVID era. And yes, we're looking at you, Disney Fox deal. And also had some great charts on the theatrical vacuum that's kind of been created by the onset of Netflix films and how that relates and how much money that could theoretically be taking out of the system and some ideas for the industry to change the tide. So definitely a high recommend to go check that out at theangler.com. And this weekend, Richard, we have at least one wide release before we have Ghostbusters and Godzilla coming in the following 2 weeks. This one's from Lionsgate with a movie star, Mark Wahlberg, the dog adventure film, Arthur the King, which is an E1 movie tracking a little under 10 million. Are you a dog movie guy, Richard, or where does this fall in your pantheon?
The children tend to like the dog movies.
I would think so.
I've heard good buzz on Arthur.
Now, Richard, will you watch a dog movie that doesn't involve them dropping F-bombs or no?
This is true.
It's better if they do, but, you know.
Where's the bar on this? Yeah.
We can hope for the Arthur the King sequel to take it in a different direction. So,
on the Strays barometer for Richard here.
Yeah, exactly. Do a crossover movie. That would be it. Yeah. At least you won't have people going to the movie thinking it's a dog movie and walking out because there are a bunch of F-bombs in it this time. So that won't happen, Richard. So we have that going for us. So you can check that out in theaters this weekend. And hopefully Ghostbusters and Godzilla versus Kong delivered to round out March here and keep the box office momentum going until summer gets here. Although of note, only one of those films spent money to buy ads in the Oscars for one 15-second spot, which I thought was a curious thing for films that are coming out in front of a movie audience. But anyway, that's a wrap for this week. Elaine, you'll have another serious business on Monday.
That is correct. Who's ready for more jobs talk?
I think a lot of people, so I think that's a very popular topic. So sign me up. I'll, of course, break down all of your dog adventure numbers to know, along with the Kung Fu Panda and Dune 2 numbers. And we'll see if they have any Oscar bumps at the box office. Kind of an antiquated concept at this point, given that everybody's on streaming for all the winners, including Oppenheimer and Poor Things as well. So I'll do that Sunday night in the Wake Up newsletter, which you get as part of your Ankler subscription over at theankler.com. And you get access to all podcasts and newsletters. Sunday's also St. Patrick's Day, Elaine. As an official Irish citizen here, I'm sending a happy St. Patrick's Day to both of you. So we'll slaunch it to both of you.
Hey, as a Chicagoan, I'm very familiar with the celebration. They don't dye the river green out here in L.A. I was bereft when I moved out here and found that.
No, it's just naturally that way, Elaine. It's fine. It's just either way. So.
Aaron Gobra.
There you go. There we go. Love it. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody out there. And of course, you can email us anytime at podcast@theankler.com and follow The Ankler on the socials of your choice at The Ankler. And a big thanks goes out to you, as always, for listening. And we'll see you next time.